We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your hosts, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 391, brought to you by Sleep Number. It's been a fun week on Yankee social media because our guys Bird and Ellsbury are no longer with the team. That's the big news of the week. Still no activity on free agency for the Yankees. It's moving at a snail's pace, as is Major League Baseball hot stove season has been the last couple years. What is up, Scott?
What's up, man? Yeah, I think the interesting thing here, though, is that there's possible news on the hot stove front for the Yankees because they're trying to not pay Ellsbury and potentially clear up money for that would be under, according to the luxury tax, that would actually affect the way that they spend this year, which would, to me, change the game and like just open up the floodgates if that actually were to happen. You know, I don't know how fast they could do that, but...
Right. Doesn't it worry you that it seems like their spending on the free agent market is contingent on how this whole thing shakes out with Ellsbury? That doesn't give me confidence because I don't like the Yankees' chances of winning a grievance against Ellsbury.
No, but I don't, I mean, look, yes, would it certainly help? Absolutely. They're going to try to free up as much money. I think it's all just, I don't think there is one on the other. I do think the luxury tax is a consideration for this year into next year. And the fact that they would get this money off is a big deal and does give them more freedom to do things. So
yeah, 21,
yeah, it's huge. It's a lot of money
and change. That's a hell of a lot of money on the luxury tax. That is, now you can add Cole to whatever he's going to get. 35.
We can get Cole and Wheeler. Everybody's happy in the world.
Right. We were sort of in our GM plans. We had to fudge numbers to sort of fit in under that luxury tax. If you take off Ellsbury's $21 million and change, that's a whole different ballgame. But like I said, the players union is so strong. Their main goal, their number one task is the players union is to maximize money for players.
Yeah.
They're not going to go down without a fight.
Oh, so hell no.
I really don't like the Yankees' chances of winning this, even if Ellsbury did see an outside doctor. There's no precedent for this sort of thing happening. That's why baseball contracts, I mean, they're ironclad. And I think that's why we're starting to see fewer and fewer long-term deals, because teams don't want to be stuck with a Jacoby Ellsbury, who is, I mean, there were so many articles written this week about what's the worst contract in Major League Baseball history. It might be Jacoby Ellsbury.
It probably is Jacoby Ellsbury. Yeah.
I know it's not the biggest, but for what he produced on the field, for the amount of games he just physically got out there, I don't know if you could find anything worse.
Yeah.
And it's only because they're the Yankees that they were able to swallow that and not have it debilitate them.
Right.
If you're a team, not any other team other than the Yankees, because the Red Sox have eaten contracts, the Dodgers have eaten contracts, but if you're not in that sort of upper echelon,
the Dodgers
elite,
have eaten the Red Sox contracts.
If you're not in that upper echelon elite category of teams as far as richness goes, you're porked if you sign Ellsbury and that's what happens.
Yeah, no, it's a big problem for any team that doesn't have the infrastructure to deal with it and take that hit. But it certainly is one of the worst contracts, if not the worst. But the thing is, the Yankees are going after this, making this a public thing and making it they obviously feel like they have a strong enough case to go after this guy and the money and the fact that, that they're maybe it's just a last ditch effort.
Well, what do they have to lose?
They have nothing to lose. But, they're making it a public thing at this point. So Yankees sometimes don't like to get into those public disputes unless they feel confident about something. I just, he probably did go see somebody. There probably was somewhere he went against that contract. Somewhere
he wasn't even with the team the past year. Who knows what the hell he was doing?
Well, they know.
Cashman had some spies trailing in Arizona,
They were probably tracking a lot of his movements and where he was going and such. As far as like going to see doctors,
Robert Kraft massage parlors.
Yeah, you never know. Maybe he's part of this. There could be a scandal around Jacoby Ellsbury.
That was near Tampa, wasn't it? Wasn't it near Tampa?
Yeah, but Jacoby Ellsbury was nowhere near Tampa.
He was on the West Coast.
We got to go out to the Redwood Forest.
Desert in Arizona.
Yeah. So he, there's obviously some kind of, infraction that occurred, and whether it's egregious enough for lawyers to come to a point and say, yeah, it's you know, they go to a hearing and it goes through. Yes, this is voided because it was so bad. Whether it's performance enhancing and a doctor, like maybe there's a combo. Maybe he went and found a new Balco out in the Pacific Northwest, and we're gonna find that out. Because if he went to an outside doctor and had and it was steroids, now you got two things. And I know contracts have not been voided because of steroids. But when you have a potential double infraction on that, like going out seeking outside medical opinion, oh, and by the way, you used as well, that could be bad enough. And like there's smoke about performance enhancing stuff. So who knows?
I think that it's going to be really tough because then there's a precedent set for these teams.
Good.
Well, but that's
the players union doesn't want that, but good for baseball.
That's whether you think that's good or bad for baseball. It's not. I don't think it's going to happen.
Right.
So football are fake. Football's fake contracts, right? You sign a guy to 7 years and it's really just 1 year. He gets his money. You cut him at any time. Baseball, you sign him for 7 years. You're friggin' stuck with him for 7 years. Ellsbury's been an anchor on the Yankees for 7 years. And the only reason they kept him around the last couple years is because insurance was picking it up. And the only reason they released him now is because insurance wasn't covering the last year of his deal. So they released him. They're going to have to pay him anyway. And it was a good PR move. Funny enough, the best PR move the Yankees have made in a while was cutting bait with Ellsbury. Everyone was on the same page. They were all happy. Like, oh my God, finally, Ellsbury's gone. And now we have this. Obviously, I would like the Yankees to get out from under the $21 million because it would help with the luxury tax. But I almost just wish you say, goodbye, good riddance, Jacoby Ellsbury. Let's not friggin' talk about it anymore.
I mean, it will always be talked about. The guy would be making, what is it, $21 million for another season where he's going to go try and play some, that's what he keeps saying, which I think is hilarious. But
it's like what, what's his name did last year, Tulowitzki, where the Blue Jays were paying him his full salary and the Yankees just picked him up for league minimum. So a team, if Ellsbury thinks he can get back on the field, a team might sign him for league minimum to see what he can do.
Here's the thing. I want him to be stripped of this money badly. I think it would be hilarious. I know that it's not his fault for making this money. In fact, the Yankees gave him the contract. Good for him for getting that contract when he did and how long he did. Personally, good for him. As a fan, F you. I don't care that whose fault it was. I just don't want you to get that money next year because you're a dick. You're a dick that came over from the Red Sox.
Why is he a dick?
Because I don't like him. I never did. I never will. I never have. I never wanted to see that.
What don't you like about Jacoby Ellsbury? Because I know nothing about Jacoby Ellsbury other than he gets injured every 5 minutes.
That's it.
That's all we know. I don't know him. There's nothing to dislike about his personality. He was an average baseball player that signed a ridiculous contract and was injury prone.
So where we are with
the Yankees for that,
it's no doubt that's their fault. Absolutely. But the only thing I know about him was from when he was on the Red Sox. So that's why I don't like him. So those
he
are
turned
the,
one MVP caliber season, which was shady as hell.
He's
if you
a Boris
look at his
guy,
statistics.
Right?
He's a Boris guy. He turned one season in which he hit 30 home runs.
Yeah. It was
miraculously
a steroid season.
Hit
it was
30
a steroid
home
season.
Runs.
Let's all just be honest with what it was. Look this at the players who were on that team at the time. It was a steroid season.
This isn't Brett Gardner hitting 28 home runs in the juice ball season. This is Jacoby Ellsbury
hitting. This is Brady Anderson hitting, you know, however many mashers. Like, what do
well,
you, like
Brady Anderson hit 55.
Yeah.
But so 30 isn't quite 55. Close but it was still out of nowhere for Ellsbury, who was like a 7, 8, 9 home run hitter at Fenway Park. Not a good left-handed hitters home run park. And all of a sudden, he hits 30, and he steals a ton of bases. He had a couple of seasons where he stole like 60 or 70 stolen bases. So I get it. Like, the talent was there. It's just he was always injured. And when he came to the Yankees, he was just like at his best with the Yankees. He was just bleh, like, okay.
You know what's funny is
there's
that
Ellsbury.
There was a clip going around where I saw it somewhere of the initial press conference when he got announced. And I feel like that's the last time I've heard him talk. When he was talking, I was like, that's weird because I don't remember what he sounds like. And now I'm hearing him talk and it's strange hearing him talk. It's like a Twilight Zone episode. And I don't remember hearing him talk since then. So no.
He had
just
one
like
controversial point
with
the Yankees.
He's a nothing.
2015 wildcard game, he was benched against Dallas Keuchel.
Yes.
And that was when he dodged the media after the game. That was like the only time that he ever did anything that someone could complain about other than not produce and not get on the field. But from like a personal and off the field standpoint, in the clubhouse standpoint,
he hit a home run in that comeback game against Baltimore in 2000 with Matt Holliday. What was that 2017?
Oh, the regular season 2018.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for anything.
So he hit a home run. That was an April game or something.
It was
like
April.
Weird.
It was very much April.
So Jacoby Ellsbury hit a big April.
He was
home
part
run
of that. Yeah, he was part of that comeback. He was part of that comeback. I think it was 2018.
He DH'd a couple of games in the 2017 playoffs.
I mean, what a worthless.
Wasn't he the DH in the 2017 wildcard game? I think he was the DH in the 2017 wildcard game.
He was a worthless POS. The guy
he produced
just nothing.
In his seasons with the Yankees, he made $158 million, maybe minus $26 million. We'll see. 520 games, a 716 OPS, and 9.8 war.
Yeah.
For $150-ish million. Absolute.
And which was a reaction, worst. Which was a clear overreaction and oversigning for losing Cano.
And then they gave him Cano's number 22. I was talking on Twitter this week about how finally we can have someone respectable again wear 22, because 22 is a good number. Like, if you have a number 22 jersey, no name on the back,
Roger Clemens,
Jimmy Key, Robinson Cano, that can be a good jersey to have. Not Ellsbury. No one wants a friggin' Jacoby Ellsbury number 22. A
lot of those double digits. I commented on your tweet. We got 22. 11 is going to be opening up at some point, whether it's used or not. But that still hasn't happened, which is a little strange to me why it hasn't happened yet. I figured those two would have, you know, been already at an agreement point. But 22, 33, the next guy that got released this year.
33 has been a historic Yankees number over the last 20 years of just fan favorites wearing it. David Wells, Nick Swisher. Who else am I forgetting? I'm forgetting a couple of other number 33s.
Swisher was, he was probably the most fun that's ever worn 33. It's a big difference when you go from Nick Swisher.
How do you get more fun than Boomer?
To Greg Bird. Well, yeah. But on the field, off the field, Swisher was the guy. But going from Swisher and then having Greg Bird, very, very different personalities. One of them's just moping around the tunnel, you know, head down, no confidence.
We're going to get to all your crazy theories about Greg Bird. I want to talk, the Ellsbury stuff, though, brings me to what I'm going to call the listener tweet of the week from Evan Pareka at EZE_Van. He says, a key characteristic about being a Yankees fan is hating 5 to 6 Yankees at a time and arguing who those guys should be. Jacoby is the first to go unanimous in the class of hated Yankees. And it really was. When the Yankees announced their 40-man roster changes and Ellsbury was finally released, I did not see one Yankees fan complaining about that. Everyone was on the same page. And that's rare. For the last couple of years,
and this one cuts so deep. Like, if you're not agreeing with this and like overjoyed and shocked also at the same time a little bit, because I guarantee you most of the people didn't realize that the insurance wasn't covering the last year. So we all thought that it was going to happen again until you see that the insurance wasn't covering it, and it makes a lot more sense. And now they're just trying to do everything they can to get out from under it. But yeah, it's a uniting storyline because it's deep. It cuts deep, and I'm telling you. The fact that the roots started with the Red Sox, then this guy came over and did absolutely nothing. And that's very much builds into the narrative of why everybody hates Jacoby Ellsbury. To a very much and smaller degree, Stephen Drew had that little bit of that element as well, where he was just
put them in different hate categories.
Different hate categories, because Stephen Drew was actually on the field sucking, right. Just horrible. Right. But also had those Red Sox roots too that made you just like a little bit more knife in the back, like, you know what? We traded for this guy. Like, they don't ever trade. We traded for this piece of shit, and he's now coming up and playing and staying on the field instead of Rob Refsnyder.
There's very different hate categories when a guy is on the field and not producing, and for whatever reason, the manager keeps penciling his name into the lineup every night. That is infuriating.
Right.
Then
especially
Jacoby
when there's
Ellsbury.
There's no hope for the future. It's not like the guy's a long stay on your team. Why are we doing
this? You're not sticking by a guy who's a veteran who is just going through a slump and you know will bust out of it.
No.
That's not what Stephen Drew was.
No.
It was just pointless to have him out there. But then there's Jacoby Ellsbury, who is never on the field, and then the rare occurrence he is on the field doesn't produce, and then he goes away again, and you don't hear about him for months at a time. And then it's like some beat reporter will tweet, oh, Jacoby Ellsbury is starting baseball activities next week. And it's like, oh, yeah, forgot about Jacoby Ellsbury and his $21.8 million on the luxury tax books. So these are very different hate categories.
Definitely. And you know, I think everybody would cringe and look the other way and be like, why is he there? Anytime they would hear rumors of Ellsbury's around the team facilities, you know, hanging out.
Get him away. Get him away.
If they go to play the Tampa Bay, they're like, Jacoby Ellsbury also in town. Like,
remember that series? They got swept and a bunch of weird stuff happened?
Yes. Jacoby Ellsbury.
He showed up for that three-game series. He was in the clubhouse. And then there's balls hitting off rafters. I think that was the series in which Clint Frazier hit it off the speaker. That would have been a go-ahead home run. Mm-hmm.
I think
the power, the power was going out.
Well, I mean, that's
the curse of it's the curse of Jacoby Ellsbury. I'm not saying that stuff would have happened if Jacoby Ellsbury didn't, but I'm not saying that.
Yeah, no, I think the
too
whole
too much of a coincidence that that stuff all happened.
There was a lot of bad things that happened that weekend, and I don't know about the power going out, because that place, you know, it's a dump. You know, the power goes out. I'm not sure Ellsbury has that. I'm not here to give him that much power, no pun intended. But there's a lot of things that were circumstantial, that were very coincidental for that weekend, and him surrounding it.
I saw a lot of people talking about worse Yankees contracts, and obviously Ellsbury. Then they also brought up Carl Pavano,
who,
in the grand scheme of things, Pavano's was a $39.5 million contract. And the whole reason that Pavano started acting like a dick was because it wasn't an even $40 million. He got pissed off over that $500,000 that the Yankees didn't give him. He's like, oh, I wanted to get $40 million, but it's only $39.5 million. So $39.5 million is chump change compared to $158 million for Jacoby Ellsbury. But Pavano was an actual dick off the field.
Yeah.
So you can hate him for a whole other reason other than why you hate Ellsbury.
Kayagawa, another guy that came over with some hype that they gave a ton of money to.
Listen,
and they paid
Kayagawa
a lot for him. And was
Kayagawa dull. Was dominant for the Scranton Wilkes-Barre Rail Riders. I saw him pitch. I've told this story before. I saw him pitch in Pawtucket against the AAA Red Sox team. He was out there 6 innings, probably 7 hits, 4 runs. It was a great performance for
4 runs. What was he topping out at? Like 87 miles per hour?
87 miles an hour on his fastball, yeah. 85 on his changeup, mixing speeds, had guys off balance.
What a disaster that was. Yeah, there were a lot of those disasters. So you see some bad contracts, but by far, Ellsbury's there. And it's all because they didn't want to. I mean, think about this. They could have given Cano that money, and they could have given Cano that contract. And it would have been better for the team on the field. There would have been that, you know, the smoke about the steroid stuff was definitely there. I don't know if the Yankees knew about it beforehand or not. It's possible that they did, but that would have been another cloud over the Yankees' head for signing Robinson Cano to another long-term contract and then dealing with that on the back end. So if you were saying, like, okay, in that offseason, Cashman's got to sign one or the other, because that's what history has told us. He either signed Ellsbury or Cano got that money too. Which is better, which is worse? I guarantee everybody would say Cano they would rather have and then deal with the steroid thing afterwards, because Ellsbury was just pointless and Cano is our guy. But it's still, that's a big deal too. Like, that was a big cloud. And the fact that, you know, he got popped and you know, just wasn't the same player for a while and has now gone to the Mets. So,
well, the Yankees offered Cano $175 million. That was their top offer to him.
Right.
And then he obviously signed with the Mariners for 200 and... Do you remember the exact number?
I don't know, but the Yankees
200
had...
200
plus. It was the extra year and the Yankees...
220 or something
Yankees
like that.
Yankees gave him more AAV. I remember that.
But I think 3 fewer years.
Yeah, but each year was paid. He was getting paid more.
So then they took the $175 million and then went to the next guy on the market. And
right.
then just immediately... It was... Within, I want to say, 48 hours, they had Jacoby Ellsbury signed. So this was, you will never not convince me it was an overreaction to Cano signing with the Mariners. Somebody, Cashman, Steinbrenner, somebody was pissed off and said, you need to get fans back on our side. You need to sign someone big. We need to have a press conference. That's exactly what that signing was, and it couldn't have backfired more.
So I think part of it was that, but also, I mean, with the time frame in which it happened, obviously they did their homework. Obviously they met with the player the people. So they had a plan, whether if they could sign Cano, then they're obviously going in that route. But if Cano didn't sign it, they had somebody ready to go at that point. So when you call it an overreaction, because of the timing, like I don't see the overreaction based on the timing. I see it as they were just looking to spend that much money on a big guy. And the two guys that they had labeled was Cano, and then Ellsbury was the other guy. It was just a mistake on the other guy, but they were going to spend that money.
Do you remember how much the Red Sox offered Ellsbury?
No, I don't.
$55 million.
Yeah, because they knew.
The Yankees topped them by $100 million. What kind of negotiating is that?
It's pretty bad negotiating.
I mean, who else was in the market for Ellsbury? I think he would have signed for half of what? $75 million. It was bizarre all around. The holiday season is here. How do you thrive during the holiday season? How do you balance sleep, holiday planning, and making time to purchase the perfect holiday gift for the special people in your life? The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed helps everyone get the proven quality sleep that will change their life. Sleep Number beds allow you to adjust on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your every movement and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably throughout the night. With Sleep IQ technology inside the bed, it tracks how you're sleeping so you can know every morning how well you've slept and gain insights for your best sleep. That sounds awesome. That's something everyone should get. Improve your sleep. I also definitely recommend the pillows. Sleep Number has sent Scott and I some of these pillows. They have three inserts in them, so if you like the pillow thin, medium, or thick, you can do whatever you want with that. And if you like them thinner, well, guess what? Bonus pillow. Boom. Come in, experience the smart, effortless comfort of the Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed during the Ultimate Sleep Number event. Save an incredible 50% on the Sleep Number 360 Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time only, at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 600 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find one near you at sleepnumber.com/Bronx. Again, sleepnumber.com/Bronx. All right, we talked about some events last week, but we've got some dates set. So March 14th weekend, we're going to be in spring training in Tampa. We've got an event on the Saturday game. Why don't you tell people about that event?
Yeah, so similar to what we did last year, guys, we have a good amount of tickets ready to go for this thing. It's March 14th weekend. And again, this is the weekend where the Yankees have home games pretty much. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and I think there's something on Thursday too, actually. But they have this is the weekend to go down to spring training. So if you are going down to Tampa this year and you're planning on it, I would highly recommend coming down this weekend. We're going to have on Saturday, we'll be up in the Bullpen Club. Tickets are on the website right now. They are for sale. So go grab them. There's only a limited amount of space up there. So we have to cap the tickets, at 100 tickets. So last year we did about 80 some people. I expect it to be, you know, significantly more this year. So I would go out and get those and make sure that, you lock them in. We also have more of our team going down from as far as writers and things like that too. So a lot of those tickets are already spoken for. So go down and grab those tickets from the fan shop. Again, the deal is going to be all you can eat. It's a game ticket, all you can eat buffet, and the buffet is really good. It's a nice spread, and all you can drink domestic beers and then soda, water, all that stuff too. All up in the Bullpen Club, which is the top area on the first base line. So they're really, really good seats. They have seats are kind of first come, first serve, but there's a big standing room area.
A lot of standing room.
Yeah. And the seats are all on the wall.
Let's be honest. You're there to eat and drink and hang out. You're not necessarily there to watch the baseball.
Yeah, we'll see some baseball. There'll be some game action, but it's good because you have there's some areas where you can kind of get away from the sun a little bit. You can get anything you want. The buffet is open practically all game. I don't remember when they closed it down. Maybe the seventh inning, eighth inning, but it was open for a while, and it had really good food. They try to, you know, make the spread very, very nice. I remember they had like pulled pork sliders or something last year. It was one of like their featured things.
Yeah, really they good. Have like a lot of traditional ballpark food, and then there was the pulled pork sliders were the new addition last year.
Yeah.
Chicken. I think there was pulled pork and pulled chicken sliders in addition to hot dogs, sausages, peanuts, Cracker Jacks, all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah. So it's a good time. And I got to look at the price. I don't remember what we had it at, but it was around $80, I think. I got to put it up because I'm putting it up the event today. So again, you're getting the game ticket, all you can eat. It's a huge deal. Like, we're pretty much just giving it to everybody at cost.
The all you can drink domestic beer alone is worth the $80 because you go to a baseball game. And I know Steinbrenner Field for spring training isn't as expensive.
It's not cheap
as Yankee Stadium, but it's not cheap either to buy some beer.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the tickets on the aftermarket as well, buying tickets to spring training, you're easily spending $100 like pretty quick. It's not
for
cheap
a weekend
to get those.
Game. Yeah. For a weekend game in spring training, home weekend game, you're gonna spend at least, I don't know about 100. You're gonna spend at least $50 to get in the stadium.
I remember the Yankees Red Sox game. We couldn't find a ticket under $100.
That was Yankees Red Sox.
Who gives a shit? It's spring training. It's the same thing as anything.
People are stupid.
Yeah, I know. It's just funny how that draw happens. But
but you're gonna spend $50 regardless to get in the stadium. Well, then you're gonna buy $50 worth of food and beer. So
yeah, it's an outstanding deal. It really is, and it's a lot of fun. So we had a really good time last year, and we're gonna do some stuff around that as well. We'll have more announcements as far as what we're gonna be doing that weekend. But we have a bunch of things going on that weekend that we're gonna be down there. I'm really looking forward to it. It's gonna be fun. Would you say this is our fifth year down in Tampa?
This will be our fifth year. The first year. Was just the two of us.
Yep.
Was the second year just the two of us too, or did we have a third person come?
I don't remember.
First two years might have been just the two of us. Tommy though hung out with us the second
Tommy
year.
Tommy was a game changer. Tommy saved our lives a couple times, and then we in turn saved.
Tommy's
his life.
Not in Tampa anymore. Tommy's in Chicago. If you're listening, Tommy, what's up?
So hopefully he needs to make it down on that weekend and revisit the old glory days. All right, so that's spring training. The first two games were also announced for the BP Crew event. And guys, we got some really good games this year. I'm very excited about them. They're premium games that the Yankees gave us. Saturday, May 9th is against the Boston Red Sox. This is a Saturday Red Sox game that, you know, for group tickets, they don't give away those games. They usually put you on a Friday because they're going to sell them anyway. So a premium game that is up on the website for Saturday, May 9th for the Red Sox. That's going to be most likely, we don't have game times yet, but it's probably going to be a 4 o'clock or even a 7 o'clock night game. So we'll be able to do something ahead of time for that, which is fun. So we'll do some kind of an event pregame beforehand. We're working on, full disclosure, we're working on some tailgate options right now.
Oh,
we'll see what happens.
You want to let the cat out of the bag?
Yeah, because if there's other people out there who can help in that regard in any way, get in touch with us, please, because we're definitely looking for the best location. We have
a couple.
Anyone
prospects. Have a big parking lot?
Yeah, we need a big
5 minutes of
the Bronx
Stadium.
in the Yankee Stadium. Then the next one that we're that's put out is June 26th. Also very excited for this one. This is a Friday night game. This is versus the Chicago Cubs. You know, obviously the Cubs don't come into town very often. This is going to be awesome. They don't give these away for group tickets, or they don't make them available. We got it Friday night, June 26th versus the Chicago Cubs. I'm pumped up for this one.
Yes, and the rest of the events will be announced down the road. But there are more events, July, August, and we're also thinking about doing a road trip maybe in September. So, Mr. Bird, Mr. March himself, Greg Bird, is DFA'd. Doesn't mean his time with the Yankees is over, because no one could pick him up. But we kind of talked about this in our GM plans. It just doesn't make sense to pay him the $1.3 million that they were going to have to pay him in arbitration to keep him, a guy who, other than Ellsbury, is the most unreliable person on planet Earth for the Yankees.
You know, how are you going to give a guy the $1.3 million to come in and be your, what, potentially fourth best first base option? Because now you have other options. Other guys have stepped up.
You just hit the nail on the head. The problem with Greg Bird, the potential.
But that's the thing.
Potentially, he's their best first baseman.
But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because now there are other guys that have shown potential, that have come in there and actually given us production on the field. I look at Mike Ford, single out Mike Ford. Now you have a guy who can play first base, who can hit the ball out of the park, and is a left-handed bat. Got all the intangibles that you want, stays on the field, is a freaking hoss, and can actually also has proven already now that he can pinch hit and hit home runs as well. So this guy has an incredible value, very similar to what you would get with Greg Bird at you know, full health and maybe he's playing well and you get the production of a Mike Ford. Because I don't even think we can talk about anymore the potential of him playing every day and being like an all-star caliber first baseman. Like, that's not even in the realm of possibility. That's not even in a potential
conversation. No, that was the reason that people were so enamored with Bird in 2017 and 2018 and 2019. Less so 2019.
Well,
really, I think the biggest disappointment was 2018, because 2016, he had the shoulder. 2017, he went through a ton more injuries, but actually played and played well in September and October in the playoffs for the Yankees. And then 2018, everyone was saying,
this is it. This
left-handed
year.
Hitter in between Judge, Sanchez, Stanton. It's perfect. He's the perfect middle guy between those hitters.
Yep.
And it was just a lost year. Another lost year for Bird.
Yeah, and after he shows us, you know, the Greg Bird of spring training, the yearly showcase of his abilities, potential of his abilities, then we have, you know, the disappointment that ensues afterwards every single time. So, I can't even talk about potential with him anymore, because for me, potential is him stepping foot on the field and staying there. Like, he's got potential to be healthy, maybe.
People, there was still a little bit of Bird fans out there, maybe just Sean in our group is the biggest Greg Bird fan.
You know, when you see him go down to Dominican, and by the way, he stunk it up in the Dominican Republic too, but when you see him go down there and you see
the mullet,
you see, like, the, you know, the mustache, I'm like, okay, you know, maybe we've gotten an edge.
It's bizarro Greg Bird.
Maybe Greg Bird has come out, yeah, and has become like the badass guy. He's like, he's put the Yankee jacket on a la Costanza, and he feels like, you know, the badass Costanza coming out and, like, not get taking shit from anybody, you know, just being confident with his words, being confident with his abilities. And you're seeing a little bit of that. You know, maybe we see that Ricky Vaughn type thing coming in to spring training. Because I said, if I see you, Greg Bird, walk into spring training this year healthy with that like weird mullet in the back that's like kind of shaved and kind of zigzagged and a mustache, I'm back on. Because you know what, to me, what that symbolizes is a mental state change. And we didn't get it. He shaved it off, got rid of the mustache again, and went back to Greg Bird. And they released him.
They
DFA'd him. He's still got a potential to come back.
You said you'd be back on Bird, and I think the moment we're going to play a quote from Bird.
I was kind of joking, in all honesty, but it would be give me a little something to dig my heels into.
But I think the moment that Greg Bird lost a lot of fans was August 16th, after August 16th lost to Tampa, a 3-1 loss in 2018. I'm going to play the quote right now.
Their frustration on your end, there hasn't been the consistency this season?
I would say so, but I told them, I'm just proud to be playing, to be completely honest. I'm proud to be putting on this uniform every day and going out and playing. It's the most games I've ever played in a season, so I kind of look at it like that, and that kind of keeps me going.
Could you internalize the pressure when things aren't going well, so you maybe get a big knock in a big spot like that?
I wouldn't say internalize the pressure. It's I got out. I'll probably have, I don't know, 5,000-7,000 more chances. So I'm pretty happy about that.
You just heard it. I'm going to have 5,000-7,000 more chances. Well, he ended up with 90 more chances, 90 more plate appearances after that for the Yankees. He slashed 150, 244, 300 for a 48 WRC plus. Just a slight smidgen shy of the 5,000-7,000 more plate appearances. But that was a loss in which the Yankees, I wrote a blog about this and I outlined the situation. So the Yankees lost 3-1 to Tampa. They were shut down by Blake Snell in the Tampa bullpen all day. They loaded the bases with nobody out against Sergio Romo in the ninth inning, down 2 runs. Greg Bird, the Rays make a pitching change, so a new guy's coming in. Greg Bird is coming up to the plate, bases loaded, nobody out. He pops up the first pitch to foul territory, and then
just
the
like
next
a lazy,
two,
lazy, horrible pop fly that was just
horrible,
a nothing swing and a nothing result.
And I'm not saying it's 100% his fault for the Yankees losing the game, because the next two batters, Brett Gardner and Austin Romine, struck out, so they could have easily just gotten a base hit, and it's all forgotten. But it was really those comments we just played after the game, where he's talking about, I'm just happy to
I'm
be
happy
out
to be
there.
Here. I'm happy to be in that situation. I'm happy to be here for the opportunity to help my team. And you know what? I didn't come through. But guess what? Not one, not two, not three. I'm going to have 9,054 more chances for that opportunity to come through again, and I'm going to be the Greg Bird that everybody wants me to be. Maybe. But if I'm not, you know what? I'm wearing the pinstripes. I'm happy. I'm actually down in Tampa. I'm wearing the road grays. I'm happy. I'm just happy to be here. This is a dream. To step on the field, it's a dream. And maybe I won't step on the field again. Maybe I will, but maybe I won't. But it's a dream.
Yeah. This is a bullshit quote. He lost me there. I was.
But it was very accurate to who he is. Is it not? Is it not more telling about the mental attitude of him? I'm not even going to say it's very chill, very laid back, way too laid back, not competitive, not going out there and saying, you know what, I am going to bust my ass. I'm mad. There's no accountability internally. This is almost like similar to the Sonny Gray stuff where I'm just, you know what? I don't know. I'm going to go out there and I felt good. You know, I don't even say to own it because I don't want you to just give me lip service. I want you to own it. I want you to get frustrated and mad that you didn't come through. And you know what?
Everybody has to be Paul O'Neill when you strike out.
I'm going to work my ass off until I get back because it's a privilege. I'm not lucky. This isn't great. I'm not fortunate. It's a privilege to put this uniform on and to play every single day. So because of all the other guys that couldn't make it to this point, I'm going to bust my ass because I was given the opportunity and I'm given multiple opportunities. Let's go. I'm going to bust my ass. But no, I'm happy to be here. And I'm going to go and just do whatever I got to do to stay in the uniform.
These quotes, what they told me is that he couldn't even believe he was out there because he's always injured. He's like, wow, I'm shocked by this. Like, I'm out there, guys. Like, yeah. I didn't roll an ankle out there. Aren't you proud of me?
High five. So he was there was a high five left up there, too.
And then 7,000 more chances. He's like, I could go get injured and the Yankees are going to keep rolling me out there. They're going to keep giving me chances. I'm going to have all these chances no matter what I do with this team. They're just going to keep giving me chances. I'll have 6,000 more chances, even if it takes me till I'm 100 years old because I can only get out there for 25 games a year. I'm going to get 6,000 more chances. Nope, you're going to get 90 and you're going to get DFA'd, jackass.
That's the thing. He's looking forward to everything else that's in the future and nothing is guaranteed. This guy felt like opportunities were guaranteed to him at some point, almost like an entitlement that yes, he's going to have those opportunities, but you didn't. And you know, whether it's just bad luck and your body wasn't cooperating or there was a part of it that was, you know, you not taking care of your body or whatever it may be. I don't know the extent of the injuries, how they occurred, why they occurred, but you know what? Taking tomorrow and acting like it's going to happen and it's inevitable is a bad attitude to take as a professional athlete.
Especially when you just popped up in the ninth inning with bases loaded and nobody out and your team lost the game. Absolutely. And hey, Greg Bird might go to another team and he might do well. I could envision a scenario where he actually stays on the field and does well, can't you?
Well, no, because I can't envision the first part of that scenario, him staying on the field.
Maybe I misspoke. If he stays on the field, I can envision a scenario in which he does well.
Again,
and people will
be
pissed off.
This is all just back on the potential side of what Greg Bird. I don't care anymore. I just don't care.
At this point, there's no point in caring about Greg Bird.
Unless he clears waivers, doesn't get traded, and is back at spring training and back on this team trying to prove himself, I'm not caring, and I'm barely caring then. But at least. Then if he can prove to do something like he's got the potential to do with the Yankees, if he's gone, I'm done. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
And these roster moves were made. We kind of glossed over what the Yankees actually did with these roster moves. They added Esteban Florial, Deve Garcia, Luis Gil, Brooks Kreske, Luis Medina, Nick Nelson, Miguel Yajur. How do you say that?
Yajur. I believe.
They added them to the 40-man roster and obviously released Ellsbury, Bird, and DFA'd Bird and Nestor Cortes Jr. So these guys that they added they're added for the protection in the Rule 5 draft. They wanted to get them on the 40-man roster so they couldn't be claimed. Obviously, everyone knows who Deve Garcia and Esteban Florial is. We've talked about them a million times. But these other guys are lesser-known pitchers in the organization in lower levels of the organization. Nelson, he ended the season at Scranton last year after spending a lot of time in Trenton. Yajur started in Tampa, moved up to Trenton last year. Kreske was a relief pitcher mostly in Trenton last year. These are guys the Yankees have eyes in the next, say, 2 to 3 years at being on the major league level, helping them in some form or fashion. A lot of these guys they added, all of them, except Florial, were pitching.
Yeah, and then you see the Luis Gils, Medinas of the world, and these guys are these are the ones that you're looking at as like those second-tier prospects that could potentially be packaged. That have a lot of ability. Some of these, Medina is one of the guys they really like a lot. Has been a big name for a while, and you know, has had location issues. So these are guys that they obviously high on. Johor, I think, is one of the guys to keep an eye on. We saw him really excel last year in Tampa and then get the call up. But he's a guy I got my eye on. I think there's people just increasing their ravings about him. And then obviously Devi Garcia is a guy that flew through the organization, came up to Scranton, struggled in the beginning, but then showed real progression and showed that he could pitch there. I'm excited about him. If he's on this team and he doesn't, you know, get traded in some kind of a package that Cashman puts together, I really do think that he could be an impact guy, because the fact that he's made those adjustments on every level and has proved that he can improve on certain things that he was struggling on, really to me is a good sign. And he seems like a gamer, man. He just seems like he's got the moxie of a guy.
How do you know?
Because just looking at, I mean, we saw him in the futures game, and just from everything I've seen, interviews, just from and scouting reports about him, the makeup's there. Like, you see a kid that has that killer instinct, and I love that.
Okay, so this story, this
you don't nugget, believe you don't believe that that's a thing.
That's not true. I just don't. I don't know how you could possibly tell at this point.
You see him competing on 1, 2, 3 different levels in the organization. There are guys watching him every day who look at that and are reporting back saying that he's got that type of instinct. These are also guys that have seen Severino come through. They've seen all the guys, Judge, Sanchez, everybody who has come through. These guys have laid talent, eyes on talent of the guys who have come up and has had success in the pros.
Eyes on talent.
Eyes on talent, baby.
Got eyes on talent.
So this, I like hearing it. It's better than not hearing it.
I'll give you that, okay? We can agree there. Larry Rothschild. So this nugget was put in a Mets blog by, I think it was Andy Martino. So this was talking about the Mets pitching coach. But this paragraph was in there. The Yankees exposed Rothschild to these new tools. The tools that he was talking about were high-speed cameras that give real-time data on depth, spin rates, and spin axis. So Rothschild was exposed to these tools, and the results were mixed at best. The team had to go around its pitching coach to help James Paxton throw more curveballs last year and save his season, according to sources. That right there is the number one reason the Yankees moved on from Larry Rothschild.
So what that tells me is that this was a guy that wasn't necessarily rejecting the technology as something that could be useful. Wasn't necessarily saying that, you know, wasn't using it, but at the same time, he had no idea how to use it.
Not capable.
Or deciphering that type of information and then implementing it and communicating it to a well enough degree that the person who's receiving this information can now absorb it, apply it, and then see results and actually feel results and see what they're talking about. So that is a big deal.
They tested them. So that kind of actually tells me the Yankees were not so sold yet on moving on from Larry Rothschild, right? Larry Rothschild could have been the pitching coach in 2020 had he done well with this technology. They gave him the opportunity. Maybe it was...
I don't necessarily think it's you know, looking at it as a test. It's just like, this is now available. We should be using it.
But what if he took the data and took the tools and was great and implemented and saved Paxton's season?
Oh, different story. I mean, yeah, for sure it's a different story.
So it was a test.
I mean, I guess it's just... I'm not necessarily saying like they put him to a test. I'm saying it's just part of what baseball is now.
Yeah.
And he's either, you know, adapting it or not. Like, I don't think
it's the direction that they want to go.
Exactly.
It's the direction they want to go. And Larry Rothschild, they didn't think is going to be capable of leading him in that direction. Clearly he wasn't.
He was not doing it to the level of where they wanted it, to the in-depthness of the direction where the Yankees were. And you know that these guys now had all year long had different eyes watching everybody, seeing how they react, seeing how they put out.
Eyes on spin rate, eyes on talent, eyes on spin rate.
Eyes on coaching, eyes everywhere.
Eyes on camera. Oh, no, that's just the Astros.
They had everything. So they were looking and making sure that all these, you know, new protocols and the way that the software is supposed to be used and that the cameras are being used and digested is according to new processes. And I just don't think that was happening. So
had to go around its pitching coach. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
That's a protocol change right there. I mean, that's a big thing.
He must have seen the writing on the wall then.
I'm sure he did.
If you're in a job and your
you
boss
you
goes,
you can't adapt to the new technology. Then yes,
your boss is used every day. You get work from your boss, and then all of a sudden, one day, your subordinate, the guy below you, is getting the work you used to get, or someone else outside the organization. Oh no, we're going to bring in an outside helper. We're going to bring in. We're going to hire a contractor to handle this project for the next 2 weeks. You better start updating your resume.
This is Larry Rothschild being introduced to email and looking at it and be like, I'm going to send these postcards out.
It's a fad. The internet's a fad.
This is not going to stick. This is definitely not going to stick. I'm about to handwrite, 50 recruitment letters and send them out snail mail.
Yeah. So are you buying this, speaking of technology, this Astros reports from Joel Sherman? The Astros could have been relaying signals using electronic buzzers or bandages this season. And there's been some pictures on the internet floating around. Nothing conclusive, just like zoomed in, blown up, fuzzy images of things on batting gloves, things on wrists.
On bats. I mean, I remember when it happened, when we were watching the games and a sticker came off. And, at the time, everybody was looking at it as one of those certification stickers for the bat itself. It was a strange scenario. I've never really seen that happen. So I think it got dismissed a little bit at that point. But going back, you could see that it was something a little different. Yeah, I mean, look, this is exactly what I said when this came out. If these guys have gone to this line and they are banging trash cans and cheating in that way, then yes, they are probably going to get better at relaying these signs. Once that goes away, now you've already crossed the line. Now you're already there. You're already living in this space. So why not get better at it? And
I think you're living in the muck. Just go. But why would you even bother with the trash cans if you have these buzzers?
Because they didn't have them yet. That's what I think. I think this is a progression.
The buzzers are a much more efficient and much more discreet way to go about this.
Yeah.
That's a smart way to cheat. The trash can's a dumb way to cheat.
Yeah. So, I mean, the trash can, again, like I still think it's one of those, like, cheating, doing things in the wide open space in front of everybody.
Maybe the trash cans were like a diversion. Even though there's a lot of video evidence to support that the trash can bangs correspond to the pitches coming. But maybe then once they started implementing these buzzers, they start banging trash cans whistling and doing things to create a diversion. Kind of what we talked about in the playoffs, where Alex Bregman does jumping jacks on first base. That's a diversion. Meanwhile, he's got a buzzer attached to his nipple.
maybe that's why he's doing jumping jacks, because it's short-wired and he's getting electrocuted. And he can't say anything because he's getting electrocuted by the buzzer.
Yeah.
And he's acting like an idiot. He's like, guys, I'm getting electrocuted.
Stop.
My head. I'm getting electrocuted.
There's a hole burned in his jersey.
I like when you go down those lines of cheating and you cross that moral code of whatever it is, the gray area. Now you're no longer in the gray. You're significantly beyond the gray. Might as well get better at it. It's already been an organizational decision at this point.
Well, what the buzzers can do is open you up to cheating outside of home stadiums. I mean, I guess you still need the camera in place, but
camera's the critical point.
Well, no, but you can have guys in center field. You can have guys with binoculars. You can have guys with other things.
It definitely opens
because
it up
the emails, cheating. The emails that were reported being sent to all the Astros scouts were steal signs from the stands, take binoculars. And a scout can take binoculars, right?
Yep.
A scout goes into the stadium and he can have binoculars because he needs binoculars.
Well, a fan can too. Anybody. I mean, who knows? Maybe they're paying Joe Schmoe off the street.
Oh, are they? Yeah, I guess binoculars are totally allowed, right? You can have binoculars. So instead of the binoculars, they're just pointing at the catcher's crotch looking for the signals.
Dude, it would be so easy to bring in one of those cameras. They're small. They're not like big cameras. You could bring
in. And did
in-
you hear these apps that they also may have been using to decipher signs?
No. I saw something about that. I don't know specifically about the apps though. Like,
so the app is basically you put in whatever it deciphers codes for you.
Right.
So you put in the sign and then the result. And then after it gets enough data, it tells you what the answer is, right? One, curveball. Two, fastball. Three, slider. And then even if it changes, well, it's eventually going to pick up what the pattern is. It's artificial intelligence. So you plug it into your phone. It's a phone app. You plug it in, and then once it spits out the results by the fourth or the fifth inning, you start buzzing Bregman on his nutsack. Ow!
It's too much.
Vibrates.
Too much. It's what's the safe word? The I don't know, man. Like it does not surprise me to at all that they have, that there's rumors now that there's buzzers and all things. Like, you look at the, Dom had a video out of the tape, around the wrists. Like, a lot of the guys had it. So who knows what's under that tape? It's just a lot of things, man. There's just too much of a smoking gun here for it not to be actually what's happening.
And I hope stuff surfaced from the World Series video, which is hilarious.
It's crazy. Yeah. There's an infinite amount of detectives on this case right now. So everything that's out there is going to be found.
What I questioned in the article I wrote this week when more footage came out is that sanctioned MLB employees were in there taking this video for the MLB DVD for the World Series video, right?
From the network, probably. It's sanctioned. Yeah, it's sanctioned, but it's not directly connected to MLB.
Do you think anywhere along the lines someone said, hey, the Astros in their tunnel have some weird stuff going on? We've seen enough to know there's some weird stuff going on in this tunnel. Do you think someone...
Are we checking bank accounts? Is that what you're getting at?
No, I'm saying checking bank accounts, but who just squashed it? Eventually, I think it had to have been raised. There's no way it couldn't have been raised, because even... maybe not during the World Series, but when they're going through all this footage to create the World Series video, there's all this extra raw footage that is there. You go through it. I don't know if the Astros had final say or what, but...
No, I think that video was put out by MLB Network, or the people at MLB Network Studios.
So did the Astros have any say?
I have no idea. I have no idea who says what. MLB Advanced Media is all controlling, most likely, about a lot of that. I don't know the process of how it's edited down and cut and where that footage goes. But, yeah, check bank accounts, because someone was paid off, maybe. That's where check the paper trail.
It goes to the top.
It goes to the bottom. Go check out the guys like Dom who are cutting video.
Right. Yeah, so... All right, we have one mailbag question. It's from Sean. Derek Jeter's Hall of Fame candidacy seems to have created infighting among Yankees Twitter. We talked about this earlier with the Twitter submission of the week. Infighting amongst Yankees Twitter pertaining to his defense. The facts are, since the DRS stat was tracked, Jeter compiled -152 at shortstop. His UZR is not much more favorable as he's rated at -66.1. I was wondering how you guys feel about A-Rod and whether he should have been the Yankees shortstop after being traded there. And more importantly, did the Yankees make a mistake and potentially cost themselves another championship or two by trotting out Jeter at short into his 40s? A couple things I want to talk about. We'll answer Sean's question. But also, Jeter is on the Hall of Fame ballot this year, and this has opened up the opportunity for moron people to start talking about how he's overrated to get clicks on their website.
Yes.
I feel like that happens every year. MLB offseason is slow. Free agents aren't being signed. Let me take down the number one guy on the Hall of Fame ballot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's people have been doing that for years with Jeter, though. I mean, they'll talk about his defense all the time, and they'll talk about all these things that are not, you know, why he was so dominant and so good, which there aren't very many of them. But people will find, and they'll look for them. And as we have noted this week too, JJ put up a blog about his off the field presence as well, which was iconic. So the fact that this guy,
but that doesn't factor into the Hall of Fame, or maybe it does.
Maybe it does.
Character is a clause on the Hall of Fame book.
Yeah, and maybe jealousy does too. Maybe there will be a guy. He will not get 100%. I see in the notes here you say, will he get 100%? No, he will not get 100%. And probably just for no other reason, also jealousy. There may be someone out there who was affected by his off the field prowess.
Well,
there was a guy that was, you know what, you know, he doesn't deserve 100% because he got pretty much 100% of every woman in the off the field that he ever wanted. He's been that guy. He's been the guy off the field that has had like the impeccable dating record from every guy's point of view. So
we've talked about the Hall of Fame so much on this show, and how
they find out anything, any reason.
It's a flawed process, because is a guy a Hall of Famer or not? What does it matter if he gets 100%, 90%, 80%? He's a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Is Derek Jeter a Hall of Famer? Yes. And if you argue otherwise, I think you're stupid.
Right.
But he is not in the same category as Mariano Rivera, in the sense that Jeter is not the greatest shortstop to ever live.
Correct.
Jeter was not even the greatest player of his era. Mariano Rivera was unequivocally the greatest closer of not only his era, but in the history of baseball. So he got 100% for that reason, I believe. Whereas Jeter will get like 94% of the vote because there'll be people that say, well, he wasn't the best then and he wasn't good here and his defense was bad, blah, 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 blah. Fact of the matter is he's a Hall of Famer. No one should deny that, but he's not going to get 100%.
So let's go to the other side of that. Do you think that there's a scenario now that precedent has been broken? Mariano has gotten the 100%.
Yeah.
And because of that reason alone, I think a lot of baseball writers or some baseball writers, maybe the more old school guys, would not give a guy a vote because of that. They just believe that nobody should get 100%. But now that's out the window. It's gone. It's done. Are we going to get more guys that are 100%? I mean, like you would, logic tells you that that could happen.
So the guys who are not going to vote for Jeter now are not the old school baseball writers. They're the new nerds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the nerds. You're right.
That's who's not voting for Jeter. Old school guys are going to vote for Jeter. 5 World Series rings, captain, over 300 batting average in the playoffs, the most hits in the playoffs
clutch
ever.
Clutch moment after
Mr. November, all that great stuff, the flip play, all that great stuff. Old guys are going to vote for Jeter. New nerds aren't going to vote for Jeter.
Yeah, maybe.
And yes, I think Mariano Rivera has opened. It's tough to tell because we haven't had a vote since then. Maybe we're going to look back in 20 years and be like, oh, that's the one guy and no one's ever going to be in Mariano's class. I'm weird like that. But I think in theory, yes, it should open up for more guys to get 100%. Say in a world, Mariano Rivera was on the ballot before Ken Griffey Jr. Say Ken Griffey Jr. was on the ballot this year for the first time. I think he would get 100%.
I think so too.
We said this when we talked about this when Griffey got 99-something%. What kind of jackass asshole?
But that's the thing.
Wouldn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr.
You don't even need the precedent for him at that point. For looking at the logic,
I agree. You shouldn't have
looking at the logic of is this guy a Hall of Famer or not? And you say no, he's not a Hall of Famer. Like that's how it has to happen. That's how that decision process has to go down. Is he a Hall of Famer? No. There's no more 100%.
Okay, then I take away your vote. Yeah. I take away your right to vote for the Hall of Fame because you clearly don't know anything
you're
about
a
baseball.
Moron. Yes. So that's the reason. And there's obviously other reasons that you're now putting into play that have nothing to do with his baseball career. And that's not right. So yeah,
no, I don't even think it's anything to do with his it's just because there's some weird politics going on.
That's my point.
Where guys it's the voting the whole the there's a flaw in the ballot too where you can only vote for 10 guys, right? So if there's 11 good candidates, right? And let's play this out. There's 11 good candidates and Ken Griffey Jr. is one of them. Mr. Baseball writer from Texas knows Ken Griffey Jr. is going to get in the Hall of Fame no matter what. I'm not going to use one of my 10 slots on Ken Griffey Jr. because I want to vote for whoever else is down
the
line to stay on the ballot, which is stupid. It shouldn't be a no.
But that's a process. That's part of the Hall of Fame process that's broken and flawed.
That's a broken, flawed system.
If you're using that as a writer, that logic as a writer, you could probably make an argument for that a little bit. There's something about that because of the way that the system is in place. There could be an argument to say, yes, this is why I'm doing this because I believe wholeheartedly that this guy is a Hall of Famer, but I know he needs more time to campaign for that and for me to convince him. So because of that, I know X player is getting in, and now because this guy is going to be gone off the ballot, no more, zero more chances, I have to try to get him back on so that he can continue the fight to get on. It's not going to change what Griffey does either way.
Right.
So
Griffey's going to get 99.
I see that side
instead of
it,
Griffey getting 99.8, he gets 99.7% of the vote.
I see that side of it. It's not right because of the system.
Yeah. So to answer Sean's question about Jeter and should the Yankees have not played him at shortstop after A-Rod and should they have not played him at shortstop into his 40s? I think that no, they should probably not have played him at shortstop when he was 40 and 41 years old. He was a bad shortstop at that point. But we have done a whole podcast on this before. It would not have worked if you traded for A-Rod and then moved Derek Jeter. Would not have worked.
No. This was Derek Jeter's team that was happening that way. A-Rod knew it. There was just no doubt about that. You just cannot do that. You can't make that move at that point unless Jeter was completely behind it, and he wasn't. So
he wasn't when he was 38 years old. Never mind when he was.
It wasn't
30,
in the realm
old
of
he
possibility.
Was when he traded when they traded for A-Rod in 2004. He was in his early 30s.
It wasn't in the realm of an existence for anybody's consideration, especially Derek Jeter. So no, it was. And yeah, did they trot him out there probably a little too long at shortstop? yes, that's most likely what happened. But I also think that the injury probably lengthened his career another year more than it would have been normally. And I think the injury changed things as well, the ankle. And the fact that, you know, they wanted to give him his due. They wanted to make sure that he was able out on his own accord. Maddie is like screaming at me to leave this room. Hold on a second.
All right. Well, we're gonna wrap this up anyway. We've got some Ellsbury voicemails to get to as well. Those should be fun. Scott, I cannot wait to hear those Ellsbury voicemails. I was talking while you were letting Maddie out of the room.
Yeah, so I haven't even listened to them yet. They're I'm sure going to be pretty much good.
Any last words on Jeter, on anything we talked about before we wrap up?
No, man, I'm just excited. I think it's going to be a fun, it'll be interesting because now he's part of the Marlins organization. So I think that part of it's kind of like weird.
Sold the Players Tribune?
But he's still involved. He just sold he got paid for it. It was an exit, but he's still on the board of directors.
You know what? Good for Jeter. I think he was struggling financially.
Yeah. Everybody didn't see this as the play from the beginning of that thing in the first place. Obviously he's trying to build this up so that he could sell it and become more of his empire. Yes. Clearly that was the plan anyway. It worked. Good for him. Yeah.
Does he still have Jeter Publishing?
He has a publishing company.
No, I know. Yeah.
Is it called Jeter Publishing. Jeter Publishing. He's got children's books.
Children's books, yeah.
Yeah, I think I have the majority of them sitting in Kemp's room.
Nice. All right, we're going to get to the Ellsbury voicemails. If you guys want to call up the voicemail line for the future, 646-480-0342. Submit your mailbag questions. Tweet us. You'll be featured as, we're going to start doing this, mailbag or listener submission, whether it's a tweet, a DM, whatever it is, of the week. Today's winner. Today's was Evan Parecia. I don't know how to say it. I'm terrible at pronouncing
names. You butcher
names. Nothing new there.
What's his Twitter handle?
I already said it. @EZE_Van.
There you go.
His was the submission winner of the week. All right. That's going to do it for this. Everyone, have a happy Thanksgiving. Yeah. Short work week, which is going to be good.
And keep an eye out for Black Friday deals. We're going to have this week, you'll have a ton of new stuff. We got some very good ugly sweaters. So if you are looking for them for the party, hold on to your pennies for another day or two, because they're going to be up and there's some doozies in there. So new stuff out there. We're going to be sales pretty much all week and into the first week of December. So lots of good stuff going up in the fan shop too.
Sweet. Talk to you next week.
Believe it or not, George isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
I must be out, or I pick up the phone.
Where could I be? Believe it or not, I'm not home.
May we have a moment of silence for the releasing of Jacoby Ellsbury. Nah, fuck that. Peace out, you prick. Oh, and Greg Berg, resurgent bandwagon. We never have to hear from you again. Bye-bye.
November 20th, 2019 will forever live in infamy. This is a great day for Yankee fans. Everybody should be smiling with joy. We have gotten the rat out of New York City. The spy sent from Massachusetts to sabotage the team has finally been evicted from the Bronx. He is gone. He is no more. He will never don pinstripes again. And we should all be extremely grateful for today. Thank you, Brian Cashman. The city of New York thanks you.
Carlos D'Angelo from Brooklyn. I'm calling to talk about Jacoby Ellsbury. Jesus loves the Yankees. So I have to think about that. And then I'm just starting to think of that episode of The Office, Goodbye Toby. You could just simply replace Toby with Jacoby. Have my singing.
Goodbye Jacoby, it's the night. Hope you found your favorite.
Okay, I'm done. All right. Well, Yankees, all right. 2020 is going to be our year. All right. Thank you. Bye.
In the wise words of Woody from Toy Story, well, good riddance, you loony. Bye-bye, Jacoby. You made one of my friends cry, who was a Red Sox fan, when you signed with the Yankees, and then you made the entire Yankees universe cry when you sucked. Goodbye. Won't miss you. Thank God 22 is free again. Let's go, Yankees.
Jacoby Ellsbury's gone? Jacoby Ellsbury's gone!
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.